Bud, what's been going on with you, buddy?
Well, I've got a good farm update for you. So I was super excited to get connected with a neighbor about potentially renting a farm near us, which would be huge for us because expanding our grazable acreage is like, you know, key for growing the business. There's just, that's a cap. That's a limiting factor is how many acres we have to even graze. So anyway, really beautiful farm, really great neighbors, you know, all things were green lights, which was cool. They got the vision for rotational grazing and liked that. And I was like, I was very stoked on it. So yeah, it went great. I mean, I came home from walking the farm with the owners and saying to Jill, like, wow, I think we're going to do this. This is big time. And all the wheels in my head started turning. And then a couple days went by and got a really kind text from the owners just saying, hey, after careful consideration, we love the idea you've got for grazing. We love the energy you have for it. We think it would be great, but we're going to stick with what we're currently doing for now on the farm and basically not do the lease with me, which initially I was really honestly pretty crushed about. Because for me, I didn't realize, I wouldn't have said it this way until this particular thing happened, but rotationally, like regenerative agriculture and the way that I've learned how to do it with cattle and livestock in general, it's like, it's one of my life's callings. And so I said to Jill when I was processing it with her, this is like if you felt called to missions in Africa and you thought you were going to this new town and helping start a church there. And this is dramatic, I know. But, and then you found out that you weren't going to go, like that the door closed and, hey, it's a good opportunity. Nothing wrong with you, nothing wrong with us, but we're just, it's not the right time.
The plane left without you.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, ooh, it hurt. And so I said to Jill, hey, I'm going to go on a run. At this point, it was dark out, almost dark out. The sun was setting, but I was like, hey, I'm going to go on a run. And I just listened to some Huberman Lab thing about changing your physical state helps change your mental state. So I kind of just knew I needed to get outside and do something physical. Before I left on the run, she said to me, Jill said, you know, we've got a lot going on this year. This might not be the worst thing that this farm didn't work out. And I said, you know, all right, I said, I know you're right about that, but I just don't feel it. So I'm going to go on this run and just let my body process the change of plans. So anyway, went on this run. To make a long story short, it was really powerful for me. It was an opportunity for God to work on my heart that, like, my will for my life is, if I'm following Jesus, is not going to always be, often will not be what God has for me, and that I need to trust him. And what seems like a great thing on the surface and what could have been, I think, a great thing, still may be a great thing in the future if we do this farm someday, you know, or any other farm someday. You know, it just wasn't in God's timing right now. And I left from that run bummed, knowing that it was going to be fine. It's going to be okay. But just feeling the morning sadness of it, processed the sadness on the run, and then came back with this renewed trust in the Lord's plan. And I realized, like, man, I was kind of like a kid not getting what he wanted with the Lord in this. I was feeling like, God, why didn't this happen? This is like my life's calling, and I was so excited about it, and all these things. You know, these neighbors are awesome. They're just really sweet people. Like, this seems like the perfect scenario. Why, God? Why didn't it work? And that's how I left for the run. And I came back just like, thank you, Lord, that it's not happening. I just trust you. You know, I don't have an earthly reason to trust you about it, because everything earthly wise looked great about it, or looked great for this deal. But I came back trusting the Lord. And just knowing in my bones that his plan for me is going to be so much better than whatever thing I could concoct. And then I came back really knowing what Jill said, which is, you know, we do have a lot of projects this year. Mm-hmm. So it's not the worst thing that the farm's not growing extensively also this year. So anyway, that was a big farm update. It was kind of a high and a low and then a high again. As I thought I was going to get this big new farm, ended up not getting it. And then also just beautiful lesson in trust in the Lord. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it heightens the anticipation of what's coming.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
For sure.
What's going on with you?
Oh, well, Tirza just sold her horse, which was the last remaining cared for livestock on Season Seals farm.
Oh, vestiges of the farm, eh?
Yeah. So this is the first time since 2017 we haven't had any livestock.
It's a nice time of year to not have any livestock, I will say.
It's superior.
Yeah.
But it's in the ember, the horse aside, you know, butchering through the pigs and the cattle, the chickens, puts us with a more refined focus on the business of making bread and pastry. That's what we're good at. And we can get curious and dabble in these other things, which are distractions to our main business.
Just to be clear, you didn't sell Ember the horse to the butcher, right? You said it right after you talked about selling your steers to butcher. And
Ember's in the capable hands of a wonderful friend.
Of a horseman.
Not at the glue use factory. Her as,
yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so that's felt like great pruning. Mm. And we'll carry hogs next year for whole hog barbecue days on the farm, but in a more controlled way, which I'll describe in later podcasts, which we do find to be profitable. But it's this season of entering into focusing on what we're really good at, having identified it, not spreading ourselves too thin and distracting ourselves with other enterprises, feels really healthy for our business right now. So that's our update.
That's awesome. Good tears. Really, that had to be a hard decision. So I know she loved that horse. So good for her to see
she
what
did.
Yeah, what was the best way to go with that?
Yeah, her reasons for selling Ember were different than our reasons for butchering the cattle, but I was really proud of her for how she maturely handled that thought process and the logic and, just a maturing young lady. So,
go Tirza. Tirza's going to be 13, right?
She'll be 13 in a few days.
Gosh. Time flies.
Fawn is taking her and all the ladies in our family to Jacksonville, Florida for a girls getaway to celebrate.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Girls trip.
It's so special. Yeah.
My girls love a girls trip. They're much younger than Tirza, but girls trip for them is just like going to your cafe.
right. But that's another big milestone for us is Tirza feels way more like a young lady than a old middle schooler, you know. Just her age and comportment and how she carries herself. It's an exciting time for us.
Yeah. She carries herself like she's older than she is. She's very, very she seems wise beyond her years. But yeah, can't believe she's turning 13. That's exciting.
Shall we dive into today's topic?
Yeah, buddy? You got a good one for us. Daniel came to me with this question that I'm excited for all of us to consider, which is what's been a key or dramatic experience in your life that dictates the way you do business today? I really had to reflect on that because I think there's a lot of things I could say about that. But Daniel and I came up with some thoughts around that we're going to kind of volley back and forth from sharing from each of our life's experiences and inviting you guys into some questions that we were wrestling with around this topic. So you want me to go first? You want to go first?
I think you should go first. I was just going to make one more comment.
Yeah.
As the great Spike Lee once said, there's power in knowing your past. And I think the question is important for us to consider where we've come from and shaping experiences, because unbeknownst to us, they have great impact on doing things, not necessarily for the better. So I think identifying what your shaping experiences have been will help you be a more thoughtful, successful operator of the business when you consider where you're coming from. And I can speak to it later, but there's several tweaks that I've even identified in going through this exercise that's really helpful. So I think we want to talk about what those shaping experiences have been for us and inviting the audience to do the same for their lives, whether they're running a business or not. I feel like this is applicable, but there's power in knowing the past. So you kick us off, buddy.
Thank you for saying that. That is the key. I know for speaking just for myself, I can just go on autopilot and not even consider what are the things beneath the surface that are driving my, what I believe, what I think, what I'm doing. So for me, where I went to was I could zoom in on lots of little experiences. But I don't know if they drive the way I show up in business as totally as, if I zoom out a little bit and just talk about, family. And so for me, family is, the biggest influence to the way I do business today. And there's several factors that, three factors I want to go through for me that invite everybody to kind of, get curious in their version of the, and it, I think they kind of go a level deeper. Like I start sort of on the surface. And then as I considered your question, I started on the surface, I should say. And so I kind of went each level deeper. So my first one's not anything earth shattering, but it basically is just simple geographic economic factors. So my parents grew up in these little towns on the coast of New Jersey, and they're about maybe an hour from New York City. And when my parents were kids there, they were truly small towns and operated as such. I was just talking to my mom this morning about it, just kind of picking her brain. And she said it kind of reminded her of Lexington, how it is now. She said, you know, it was a small enough area that people could get together with an idea, you know, like, they wanted to put tennis courts in the park, so they got enough people together and raised the money, and people put tennis courts in the park kind of thing. She was saying it's not like where I grew up, Northern Virginia, where if you wanted to put tennis courts in the park, it'd probably take you 5 years and $5 million. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And environmental studies and who knows what else. So anyway, these places that operated as small towns changed tremendously in my parents' lifetime and even in my lifetime. And so what I realized that baked into my psyche is the possibility for growth. Like I saw family members and friends of family members that went from totally blue collar, you know, jobs or lives to like having these really successful businesses, in part because they're on the edge of one of the most significant economic hubs in the world of New York City. And even things like the real estate in that area, you know, one of my uncles bought his house for, I think like $70,000, and it's worth, and this is back in probably the '80s, and it's worth 12 times that today easily. I mean, he's done a ton of work to it, but still, like, I recognize as I look at that there's other places my family could be from where seeing those possibilities wouldn't be the same. Like, for instance, my father-in-law grew up in a steel town outside of Pittsburgh. I mean, had a great upbringing, but one thing that was different about his hometown is once the steel mills closed, economically, things have never been quite the same. So there wasn't this upward trajectory of that area. It was more like... you know, it was more like maybe a slowdown or kind of evening off once those mills closed. So just kind of realizing like, wow, I got to see that there's potential for growth. And that's something that's a real possibility that I got to see growing up from childhood to now. I think a negative of that could be sort of rose-colored glasses and assuming that's everywhere. It's sobering to realize, hey, it's not like there's pockets where real economic growth is happening. And when you're in business, you need to be looking for those, not just assuming if you build it, it will come kind of thing. Mm. So the question I have from there is for you, Daniel, for anyone listening, what context from your younger years, maybe, or even for more recently, did you experience that influences the way you're doing business today? Have you ever thought about what factors could be contributing to how you're showing up in business? I'm curious your take on that, because you grew up in Northern Virginia, as did I, where kind of a similar thing. Like, Northern Virginia has just basically been after World War II, a constant upward growth line.
I think the first thing that comes to mind, this is without giving it any thought, but I think there's something to it. I think that context, which shapes our trajectory, was being homeschooled in Northern Virginia. So I was homeschooled from the third grade to graduation. A lot of it was in Northern Virginia. Some of it was sprinkled around the United States based on my dad's profession. But the homeschooling, it wasn't like now where it's very common. You were an oddball if you were homeschooled, you know, and there's a certain stereotype that most of the time we lived into. That was the context. I'm an other, I'm outsider, I'm different. And that wasn't a negative experience for me. Looking back, I had self-confidence in that context. But now, doing something so contrary to the cultural norm,
with
like leaving
business,
the military to start a farm and build a bakery in my backyard, that's context to where I came from, and being different, the outsider, I almost relished that more than I was fearful of the response from peers. So that's a great question. Haven't thought about it. I think that's the context in which I still operate. And it's funny now, homeschooling our children is, wanting to empower them with that same context too, of doing something a little hairy, a little different is to be celebrated, vice scorned.
That's awesome. So,
that's a great question.
You want to go next?
Sure, I'll go next. I think I risk sounding like a broken record, but my most shaping experience was the first of my deployments. And it lasted for 10 months. And there was a lot of little pockets of significant experience that all have play into who I am. But thinking about the podcast and what are some of those most dramatic experiences, I kind of just wanted to hone in on two particular. And both of these I can make direct ties to how we do business now. And
I can't wait to hear what you're about to tell me. Army Ranger stories, here we go.
Yeah. The second one is more rangerific, so you'll just have to keep listening. But the first one shows is a bit more sappy.
I like sappy too. That's good.
When I, on my first deployment, saying goodbye to Fawn and Tirza was a dramatic experience and has stayed with me since. And it directly correlates to where we are business-wise. But I was so nervous. We were driving, it was Tacoma, Washington. We were driving, I was driving Fawn and Tirza, we were going to the parking lot where she was going to drop me off.
You're like getting in a plane, flying.
Yeah, and I had to stop and get some gummy bears to tide me over. And I was so nervous, I rear-ended another car in the gas station parking lot.
Oh my gosh.
Which I'm not the best driver, but this was just, I was just so wrapped up in the anticipation of saying goodbye. But we get to the parking lot, and it was just a sorrowful, intense, and I just feel that even now describing it, this idea and of saying goodbye with no assurance of seeing each other again.
This is you getting deployed, going to Afghanistan,
this is going to Afghanistan. And, you know, we'd been married for 18 months. Tirza was, what was she, 6 or 9 months old, and looking at Fawn try and hold back her tears to help me, you know, be strong in that moment. And then looking at Tirza and nothing was outside the ordinary. She had no context for the goodbye. Mm-hmm. And that really tore me up. Like, if this is the last moment of our interaction, mm-hmm. How is it? That's intense.
That's so heavy.
When you're engaging on that and trying to engage with it because it's a meaningful moment, but also trying to be dismissive of it to maintain your composure. I'm supposed to be the leader, you know, follow me. You know, I'm over here trying to fight back tears with my family. It's an interesting dynamic mm-hmm. in that moment, but so impactful. And so we got on the bus, said goodbye, you know, couldn't look back. Because I thought, man, I'm not going to be able to hold it together. Mm-hmm. And embracing what was to come instead of being fearful of that, what mm-hmm. was to come. That was deeply impactful. And so on several levels, but once you say goodbye, you lose the control over the situation. And I don't believe that we carry the control. You know, we certainly have the power of decision-making and such. But when you're together, when I could touch Fawn and see Tirza, there's a sense of control that everything will be okay. You know, when the bus rounded the corner and you separate, the plane lifts off and you're in hostile territory, like you lose any sense of control. And so not everybody listening has this faith-based interaction with life like you and I do, which I think is absolutely fine. But it's interesting how different people responded to that. And our default was taking hope and trust in the Lord that he would care for us since we didn't have control over that mm-hmm. situation. And that was the only hope-giving piece that we had in our separation. I don't know how people do it outside of a deep faith walk. Mm-hmm. And it's just very interesting the other things that people turn to offer some sort of distraction or satisfaction in that loneliness. Really interesting. But for us, that was a deep part of how we handled that situation, was a deeper reliance upon the Lord. So looking, fast forwarding to where we are now, we care very much about doing business together. Like, we've experienced that depth of separation mm-hmm. and we don't want to visit that again. And so the idea of doing business together, being hand in hand, you know, being able to walk out the door, the 50 feet to the bakery and have an interaction. The children are always in and around. We do that because of that deeply shaping experience. And it's good, I think, to articulate that, to realize that's where we're coming from. And also with this faith component on, and this is not written about in very many business books, but there is a deep reliance upon the Lord to lead and guide the business because so much of these things are outside of our control, you know? And amen. So I find we're not always great about it, but being purposeful about giving the business to the Lord to make payroll, to properly care for employees, to, you know, lead the next, you know, chapter of the business. We try and be very purposeful that, but that all came from that first experience of separation and saying goodbye. So you ended with a question. I didn't think that far into what the question is to be begged of the audience, but I think considering your past and engaging with it, because they directly shapes who you are and how you're operating right now. And the negative of this is I think we can self-limit business-wise because we hold so tightly to being together and staying together, and extended periods away from each other are not cool. Mm-hmm. So we can limit ourselves business-wise, which I think we've embraced, but it's a limiting factor, which we acknowledge. But that's my first one.
Man, so powerful. You know, where my head goes with that is that there are, I think this is kind of a theme of this podcast to a certain extent, but what you could, I ask myself, like, okay, what things felt like the worst, hardest thing that really, you know, like you said, through, we look at it through a faith background. Mm-hmm. So I would say, like, by the grace of God, mm-hmm. have been the biggest gift. Because it's so easy to look at the worst things that have happened in life and let them stay the worst. Like, mm-hmm. you could take the same experience with saying goodbye to Fawn and hold on to the trauma of it and let that trauma grip you to the point where you feel paralyzed to do anything that doesn't involve her or anything that's too risky anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, the pendulum could swing, because that was a very risky thing to mm-hmm. leave your wife and child and go off to war. I mean, that's the height of risk. You know, you could have chosen to let the pendulum swing. I think it's powerful to consider, what are some of those deeply moving experiences? That's mm-hmm. what I hear from you, I just listening to you tell that story, I mean, you and I are both starting to tear up. It's just powerful. So what are those that could shape your business in a positive way today? I think it's really cool how you've taken that to use it to shape the way you and Fawn are going to approach working together in a really beautiful way versus letting the enemy take that and let it be a wedge between the two of you, or let it be
limiting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Limiting factor. That's powerful, man. I started like totally on the surface and you went to.
I think there's value in.
Yeah, there's value both. Yeah.
It feels like every question we pose, you and I approach it differently, which it I is think true. Is great. And the listeners will do the same.
Yeah. I'm getting there with mine too.
There's
I'm
just an there. Opportunity. Those are hard things. And the opportunity to use them for good in the future, I think the default would be not to do so, or have them deep impact you to the point where they're debilitating. And it's a choice. And I think hence the podcast, looking at the past and looking what those shaping experiences have been and using them for good in business or in life in general. But yeah. All right. Volley back to you, buddy.
Okay, so going along with my theme of family being the big thing that influences the way I do business today, I got to talk about my parents and my grandparents too. But so I would say a awesome thing about, I guess, first my grandparents, both my grandfathers in these small towns were like, were just sort of key people in the community. My one grandfather was the town doctor. Mm. Everybody knew him. I mean, even to this day, I meet people that like, Doc Powers was your grandpa, when I'm up in these towns, you know, less and less nowadays as the years go by, but he did house calls. It was, it was very idealistic, which is a word I'll bring up again. And I would say my parents are they're so cool. We're both with my mom and my dad. I feel almost just as much friends with them as a parent relationship now, especially as an adult. But one thing they each are is very individualistic in that, like, they're very much themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think without even maybe being intentionally doing this, they really instilled in me a confidence in myself, a knowing of myself. Like, a way that they would do that practically is they would, like, I played lacrosse growing up. My dad didn't play lacrosse when he was a kid. And, you know, so the way they would support me is they would go to all my games. If I wanted to do a lacrosse camp, or they might even research, you know, different camps I could do. They were really supportive of me doing that pursuit. But at the same time, like, I can't even remember if my dad ever even attempted to play catch with me doing lacrosse, because that's not his thing. He would support me in it fully. He would go to every game, mm-hmm. but not something he's passionate about. So he's not going to learn it just to please me or something, mm-hmm. you know? So anyway, I think that could be almost I look at that as a pro, frankly, because I learned to connect with him on things he liked to do. And I felt fully supported by him in the choices I made growing up. So what that, I guess, instilled in me is like a freedom to do what I thought was best for me, which then when I went into doing business, I often joke I've never had a real job, mm-hmm. Because I went from college to interning at a farm to starting my own farm. And there was never from my parents like a question of, well, don't you want to get a real job, buddy? Are you sure you're going to be okay doing just farming? You know, it's a pretty crazy idea growing up in the suburbs to say, yeah, I'm going to spend every dime I have trying to start this farm and and do it. So felt very supported by them, which was huge. I think, so that was a pro. I think a con to all of this, especially with actually my grandparents, because I'm a little farther removed relationally from them, is it's really easy for me to idealize people in my family. And whenever you create an ideal about a person, like a person isn't an ideal. They are still a person. You know, my grandfathers, with all of their awesome things that they did, I didn't mention my other grandfather, but he was a businessman and was just a real magnet for people and building community and, yeah, won't get into it, but did a lot of cool things in his town. I can idealize that tremendously and think, oh, I'm not living up to this ideal that these guys were. And man, what a waste of time that is. And what a detriment that is to their memory, even to pretend like they weren't, you know, people that had all their own issues, you know? So I come to the question of, consider what your relationship has been with your parents, whether it the good, the bad, the difficult, or maybe the lack thereof, and maybe even farther down the line with other people in your family. And I think, have you tried humanizing your parents? Have you tried humanizing your, maybe your grandparents or uncle, aunt, whoever it is that's in your family that you kind of look to for wisdom? Yeah, have you taken a realistic approach to what their, to their decision-making? And yeah, have you been able to, I guess, embrace the gifts that they did give you, whether those be, like I mentioned, kind of an easier one, which is how supported I felt by my parents. But there could be harder things too, right? Have you looked at the gift that those things are in your life and really taken stock of those? I didn't really think about it much, Daniel, until you asked me that question. I thought, man, what is it about my parents and that they've instilled this freedom in me to pursue stuff? Anyway, yeah, what's your take on that with your upbringing, with your family?
That's a great question.
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot.
Where I go is considering my upbringing. What does that look like in how I choose to parent? And the any shots I would take at my parents, and I have just wonderful parents. Anything, oh, I can't believe they did that or this or the other. I find myself doing the same things with my children. So I think I'm gaining in this area of humility as I see my own tendencies to do the exact same things that have frustrated me in the past with my parents. But that has negative connotations. We are in a position to be able to do this business in large part because of my parents' physical support of the business, despite it at one time not being their favorite thing. Like they made a deliberate decision to support us, and for that I'm so grateful. And so looking forward, how do I propagate that with my children? Maybe it's in their business. Maybe it's them taking over what I hope to be a legacy business, is choosing, making a conscious choice to support them. So I think I hear your question, and I consider what it means for me. What family construct am I building now to impact my children? But it's a great question.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm still processing it, because I think another, for me too, another layer is like, okay, so what am I instilling in my kids right now?
Yeah.
That's going to influence the way they approach their life's calling and the business that they're going to, you know, participate in.
We talked about this last night, but just as a cliff note, side note, whatever, note, how the tendency is to spend most of our time focusing on the business and the growth of their business, and how the tendency is to steer towards that vice. How are we equipping the children?
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's an interesting note to marinate on.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you mind if I say my second thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready.
This one is also from deployment. It has direct ties to how I run and operate the business, for better or for worse. So I'm going to kind of verbally process it.
Yeah.
As we chat. But before I begin, I will say that some of these dramatic experiences from deployment, they have been deeply significant to me, but so many people have walked through the same and given more, done more, sacrificed more. And I just want to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Also encourage people to engage with those memories on more than just a dramatic level.
Mm-hmm.
But people all over have the same experience. So I just don't want to make it seem like I'm the only one that's ever walked through this, because that's just not true. But this was our first patrol in Afghanistan, and it was essentially movement to contact. You're moving on patrol with your element to make contact with the enemy. We rarely knew where they were, and once contact is made, you look to destroy the enemy.
So you're literally like out walking through the desert or mountainous territory or whatever.
Yes, we were along the Argandab River, a very fertile agricultural community. It was dry, but they salvaged every drop of moisture to grow some abundant crops. So, you know, pomegranates were all over. So it's not a desert. Don't think of that. Think of a dry riverbed, but every bit of moisture has been captured for some really gorgeous terrain right along the river.
Okay.
So we're walking in that, in what is called a movement to contact. And few of us in the element had received contact, is what we call engaging with the enemy, before. And the heightened anticipation is unreal. So you take this, you know, the goodbye that I previously said, Fawn, you know what you're walking into, and you have to embrace it, or else you're just crippled by fear. And so this anticipation is just so thick. And I know it sounds so trite to say, like the hairs on the back of your head were standing up, but it felt like they were lifting my shirt off my back. Like you were your senses are so sharp, and you're just waiting. There's just this air of anticipation, and it's so intense because it could result in death, you know, and you know that conceptually, even though you haven't experienced it yet. So that's one feeling that I was going through. And this other feeling of being the officer in charge of this element was this intense sense of control and responsibility on my shoulders to decision make at the most critical junctures of what potentially could happen. So amidst this anticipation, you're gaming out, you know, what am I going to do with this? What am I going to do here? Where am I? You know, so this is running through your head at the same time. And then crack, you know, the first bullets leave the enemy weapons and, you know, they make just a crack as they come by your head. And it's like all the built up tension is then dissolves in a good way that provides freedom for action. And you either, there's two responses in the situation like that that are tangibly witnessed. It either frees you up to decision make, and you feel this sense of being alive that's unlike anything else I've ever experienced, or it's debilitating. And in this first contact, I had a team leader. This is dramatic, but it happened. You know, he receives contact. We're in a tight situation, and he comes and he's crying, and he falls at my feet, and he's just, I can't believe they're shooting at us, you know. And that was a end of the spectrum response to this intense situation. So you have that sort of response, and then what I grew to idolize isn't the best, but kind of covet the experience of being in control in the most intense situations. Mm-hmm. I just love that anticipation. Loved it. Anyway, so how does this relate to business nowadays? So we go through this contact. This particular contact resulted in the enemy retrograding. They left the battlefield, so to speak.
So you guys start returning fire, and
we return
fire. It's a shootout,
fire.
Basically.
It's a shootout from distance, and at this point in the war, the Taliban particularly couldn't match our weapon systems.
So yeah, what are they shooting at you with?
RPKs were a light submachine gun, and then AK-47s were a most typical armament. Okay. Like, so this was a small arms fire.
Mm-hmm.
Their most disastrous weapon system was the IED, the improvised explosive device. So they would kind of draw us into a baited ambush. So they couldn't compare with our munitions round for round, but they would get our attention with the intent of having us move towards them into a minefield, basically. Mm-hmm. And this was learned at great expense over time that this is how they operated. Anyway, this particular contact didn't result in anything significant. We traded a huge amount of, you know, fire with the enemy. We left, they left, end of story. But this was typical, and this happened a lot, and it characterized this deployment. But looking back at that shaping experience, it's both good and bad for how I do business now. I really like reacting to problems now. I actually get anxious every morning before stepping foot in the bakery, like this anticipation of shots fired, you know, this anticipation of what problem is there going to be to solve. I get physically anxious about it, and then that is dispelled at first contact, you know. Mm-hmm. Of the baker saying, we don't have flour today, you know. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this $200 order is burned, or whatever the situation is. I really relish reacting to those problem sets.
Do you like the anxiety too beforehand?
No, I don't like that anticipation. I haven't figured out a way to properly deal with that or harness that. Mm-hmm. But this directly plays into how we do business. The downside here is I don't plan very well. I love reacting. And So
you set up scenarios where you can get the thrill of reacting. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this comes at a costly price for everybody else in the bakery, because a strength of mine is reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And a strength of mine is not planning, and it's because I can react so well, you know, and learning that not everybody operates that, and that's not the best way to run a bakery, by the way. But learning this is fundamental in who I am because of these experiences, and it's not always favorable manifestation in the bakery. So I'm learning and engaging with that, and that's hours old. You know, I hadn't identified that prior to, you know, preparing for this podcast. And the other piece is I relish control. I love being in control. And I don't...
Don't we all?
Yeah. And that can be really limiting to the business. Mm-hmm. But it was born out of these stressful situations where I loved being the shot caller. I loved, you know, you call the gunship to bring him in. We need a medevac here. You know, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will create scenarios in which I'm always in control calling the shots. And it's until recently that I've structured the bakery in that way where I'm the single point of failure, despite the fact there's so many capable persons working for the bakery. So having acknowledged
that could
such,
also do that.
Oh, yeah. In fact, they're more capable than I am. So the push recently has been to delegate and to maintain what's important to control in the business and the vision, the trajectory, the goals, the strategic architecture of the business, and to release those other things that people can manage far better than I. these are things coming from these shaping experiences. So one, the way I've handled those experiences up to this point are just like they make for good stories and wonderful reminiscences as I think about that time that I felt most alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the better way to engage with them is to look and see how they're impacting us with the business. And they really are. So I'm still fleshing those things out, but that has been a shaping experience. The last thing, and perhaps maybe the most important about those life and death situations, are that many of the problems I think I can handle well in the bakery because I have perspective. I think I've gained a fair amount of perspective, and everything seems a little bit less than problem-wise compared to those deployment experiences when life was literally on the line. And so I think that helps me respond to that should help me respond to problems.
Gives
well.
Gives you some context.
Right, yeah. You know, being more deliberate in my interactions with our team, with how we handle stress within the business. So there's some I need to live up to there. I'm not great at it, but I think that is a positive contributing factor for sure.
Yeah, I feel like you're striking gold with the connection to the control piece, because I think, you know, as humans, that's what we all want is comfort, control. We want to be right, you know? So as I'm listening to your story, I'm wondering, in what areas am I concocting this whole scenario, areas in the business, am I concocting this whole scenario so that ultimately I'm the one in control instead of trusting somebody on our team, or maybe instead of outsourcing a thing that clearly could be done better by someone else, as you were saying. Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's the question might be like, where are you holding on to control to your detriment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for processing that real time.
Yeah, it's work. I think, yeah, it feels really healthy to process.
I also it's just the meathead in me, but I love any time you want to tell one of your ranger stories. I want to ask more details about the firefight and whatever you would call it. I would call it that, shootout.
Yeah, the firefight.
Yeah.
We always are talking about what would be appropriate to share.
Yeah.
So we'll loosen up over time. But,
yeah, that's right. We'll find the line.
Yeah.
But eventually we'll probably cross it. Yeah. Get some negative comments about it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so my third thing from family that I was processing is really kind of the deepest one of late, and it's been the most powerful gift to me in business because it was one of the hardest things. So Jill and I partnered with my brother and his wife in buying a house right near the farm, remodeling it, turning it into an Airbnb. And I'll talk about the pros, the cons, and what I learned, kind of the question I would pose to you guys. So the pro of it is that my brother and I are best friends, so we have very similar senses of humor. We genuinely just love being together and working together, and a lot of fun is always had whenever we're together, whether that be working or hanging or whatever. You know, we love each other. So it seemed like a no-brainer to me to do something like a business project together. And this particular one, I didn't process much for myself how I would show up in a partnership, especially with my brother. I just kind of went into it like with that premise. Love him. We have great time together. He's a hard worker. I'm a hard worker. No, you know, he's full of integrity. I trust him completely. Like, and all of that's true, was true throughout and is still true. What I learned from doing this partnership with my brother, though, is frankly, I just learned a lot about myself. And I guess some of the negatives I learned were it's kind of similar to what we were just talking about the control piece. I learned that I really I start to get like heavy in the chest as I think about this, because I have an emotional response to how I showed up. But I really didn't process how I would be as a partner for anyone in a business. And I didn't realize how much my ego of wanting to be in control and be right and be the guy that got it done would show up, even with my brother, who I love and trust to the ends of the earth. And so I didn't do anything that I think lacked integrity either, or that was untrustworthy, but I did concoct a situation where I needed to be the guy to get the project done, you know, remodeling the house. I wanted to take point on that, and I did, and I chose to spend a lot of time being the guy getting it done, versus hiring contractors when we could have and things like that. I wanted to be
the guy.
Yeah, in the trenches to use the war analogy. And there was some big negatives to that, where it created distance in the partnership, which then put pressure on our relationship. And ultimately, it led to a lot of stuff that Jill and I and John and Kaylee needed to process sort of in the wake of finishing up the project. And the way they showed up and the way we showed up, just open-handed, bearing how each of us was hurt through doing this, what we enjoyed about doing it, but what didn't work for each of us, judgments we had of each other coming out of it, all of that was really hard to walk through with, again, one of my best friends, mm-hmm. someone I love more than really many people in the world, my brother. And there was a lot of pain in it, and the gift of it was the honesty and the being able to look at myself again in a new way. So I don't know if I'm being like succinct enough or clear enough with what mm-hmm. I'm saying. You know, I could go into all the little examples, but some things I learned that were such a gift were, I have up until then, I had a tendency to do things in a way to prove to myself that I'm enough, to set up scenarios so that I'm, as you were saying it, Daniel, sort of the linchpin, so that I can prove, buddy, you're enough, mm-hmm. versus doing things maybe the best or more efficient way, mm-hmm. the more economical way, maybe even. And, you know, unfortunately, my brother and Jill and Kaylee kind of got sucked along with me on realizing that about myself. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I learned through that experience was, you know, going into the partnership with my brother, one of the great gifts of it is all the mistakes that any of us made involved in it. Like, I always joke, it was great to learn this with my brother, because at the end of the day, we love each other now mm-hmm. more than ever. And mm-hmm. we can lean on, if he got the better of me in one part of it and I got the better of him in another part of it, I'm happy for him. And I know he's happy for me. There's that freedom versus mm-hmm. I think if we weren't brothers, it could be like, I hate that guy or something, mm-hmm. you know, like really turn on each other. So anyway, all that to say, I realize now that I have value and I don't have to prove that to myself or anyone, but I can bring inherent value to a business deal. And I think I went into that partnership, redoing this house together, not thinking about the value, not really processing the value I was bringing to the table up front, and kind of trying to retroactively talk about that later, which isn't, that's not, if in the future as a partner, that's something I'm committed to not do. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to be clear up front about the value I think I'm bringing to the table. Mm. 'Cause I know that's something that can grow and change. But if you and I, Daniel, were going to do a partnership, I would want to get really clear on what's the value you're bringing to the table, what's the value I'm bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. Let's just be really honest about it. No, let's take the ego out of it. Let's take mm-hmm. the needing to be, to justify ourselves and prove that I'm enough, and just say, hey, objectively, what's the value we're each bringing mm-hmm. to the table? So that was a huge gift to me in business because, again, I got to learn alongside my brother, who was gracious with me through all that. And it really has helped me think about, okay, going forward, I can really more honestly look at the gifts God's given me and how I might utilize them in business. And I can at least take a step towards letting go of my ego and needing to justify myself by doing a business project. And I can look at the business project more objectively to say, like, okay, what is the actual goal of this business venture? Mm-hmm. What can I contribute to it? So anyway, I get emotional still talking about it because of the, I think honestly, just because of the, there was a season of pain, of deep pain involved in realizing all this about myself, of guilt and shame and wishing I'd shown up differently and better as a partner. And so I still feel a little bit of that. So did that make sense?
Yeah, it made a lot of sense. I'm just sitting here thinking about, you said three things. I think I'm wrapping with two, but just this, there's such value to us as business owners to engage with these things that have happened in a self-reflective way. You're not looking at it how you can justify your actions with your brother. I'm not looking at only the good that has come from these experiences in Afghanistan. It's like, all right, this has shaped me in not so great a way to be a not so great boss. So if you're willing to engage with those things kind of with an open mind to how you can be better, I think that's where the power that Spike Lee talked about, there's power in considering the past. Mm-hmm. That's where their power. It's not a, I am who I am, so that's who I am. You know, it's what has made me who I am and how can I engage with that to be better and to ask yourself those questions that you've been posing. That was a lot of words, but I think there's great purpose in doing this for everybody.
Yeah.
Certainly on a business level and even more so on a personal level as well.
Yeah. The questions I came up with for that last point for me is there anywhere in your business where you've been undervaluing what you bring to the table? And then another question on the heels of that, is there somewhere in your business where your ego, where being right about something or
being in control,
needing to be in control, yeah, has become more important than actually completing the mission at hand? Mm-hmm. Whether that be baking the best croissants in the world or hosting the best events or raising the best cattle or whatever it is you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think those are two questions. It's the biggest gift of being a partner with my brother was learning that I can go to those two questions and answer them in unhealthy ways, or I can take a second, truly ask myself, what am I up to here? And I can answer those same questions about being honest about the value I have and being honest about where I'm grasping at control and show up in a really healthy, positive, productive way in the way that I want to show up. So, yeah. This has been a very, I feel like, vulnerable podcast.
Yeah, I think we have limited ourselves in many ways, business-wise, and the only way to have eyes to see that is to engage with the past,
I think. These questions.
I think so.
Yeah, and it's great to have, a friend or the community to be able to bounce this around with. Because it's really weird when it just stays in your head. You've got to be able to externalize these things and process them. So yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I'm really curious what other entrepreneurs listening, what their take is on all this stuff and what their answers to these questions would be. Because that's the other thing about having the community in it. Like your answers, Daniel, your questions are a gift to me. Mm-hmm. And invite me into processing my own stuff in a new way. Mm-hmm. So I love that piece of it.
Me too. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, man. This was fun.
That's great.